This is Jim Inkster. Coming next on the show, we will visit with lobbyist Jim Nickel, the former chairman and executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party. Yesterday, Governor Jindal continued his tirade against President Obama, calling him the worst president ever, questioning the president's intelligence. We'll talk with Jim Nickel about this. Are these fighting words between the two Ivy Leaguers? And much going on at the state capitol with the legislative session to begin Monday. Jim Nickel will comment on this, as well as State Representative Dalton Honore, who has been advocating the legalization of marijuana in Louisiana and reduced sentences for those who are convicted of marijuana possession. We'll talk about that in the latter part of the hour. But now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Much to talk about with Jim Nickel, the former chairman and executive director of the Louisiana Democratic Party, native of Crowley, graduate of LSU. And right out of college in 1986, he helped steer John Berlinger Brough to victory over Henson Moore in the U.S. Senate race of 28 years ago. Now we have another big Senate race brewing between Democrat Mary Landrieu and a few Republicans, most notably the Congressman from the 6th District, Bill Cassidy. We'll talk about this with Jim Nickel and more, but why don't we begin with that before we get to the governor and the session and all kinds of other stuff. How do you see the Senate race for 2014?
Parties that are watching this race would acknowledge that Louisiana's U.S. Senate race is one of the premier races around the country. We're already seeing a tremendous amount of third-party money being spent in the state. I think we will continue to see that. I think we will see Senator Landrieu's campaign start to ramp up more, and then we'll see. You know, right now Congressman Cassidy really hasn't had to spend a whole lot of money. The third-party groups have filled that void for him, but I mean, look, in the end, this could be $20, $30 million spent in Louisiana on one Senate race, and it's going to be close, and it's going to be hand-to-hand combat, and it may end up in a December runoff, and we'll see. I think, you know, folks like me and you, political folks, are watching it very closely. I'm not sure voters are quite tuned in yet. I mean, they see the ads, and they know there's a race, but they've got other things on their mind. But as the race gets more focused from voters, I think we're going to see very close polling and a tough re-election race for Senator Landrieu, but she's had close ones before, and she seems to win close ones, and she's not going to go down without a fight, and certainly Congressman Cassidy is going to have a lot of money behind him, and he's going to be tough, so it'll be a humdinger, no doubt about it. I think one thing that the Democrats may be a little concerned about is that there are some Senate races around the country that they thought maybe were slam dunks that are now getting a little close, so some of the funding that maybe have come to Louisiana to help Landrieu may have to go to Minnesota and other states, so that could be troubling for them. But in the end, there won't be a lack of resources.
297-5633, your number, if you'd like to talk with Jim Nickel, who's been in Louisiana politics now for almost three decades, started as a college student at LSU and became the head of the Democratic Party during its heyday and during his time. That was when Mary Landrieu was elected. You were chairman in 1996 when you beat Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins by 5,788 votes. That was a cliffhanger.
It was, and an interesting time. She had just run for governor and was unsuccessful in the governor's race and came off of that and was able to succeed Senator Johnston, but certainly still have vivid memories of that recount that Representative Jenkins wanted in Washington, and Senator Landrieu was able to overcome some of those challenges, and she's now, you know, chair of the Senate Energy Committee, which is pretty significant. You know, John Brough, my old boss, spent a lot of time in Washington, rose to a lot of prominence, but never rose to a chairmanship. They don't happen often, and she's got a plum spot that will help her raise money, help bring focus to Louisiana's energy issues in Washington. It's a good place for her to be to run for reelection.
Jim Nickel and I were in the same building for many years when he was with the Democratic Party and I was with the Louisiana Radio Network. We were four floors apart, and I remember on election night I used to come down and check in on you. And 1991, when Edwin Edwards beat David Duke, I remember Hal Killshaw saying, "We're going to win them all," and you almost did. Only Fox McKithen survived. Right. But what the heck happened to the Democratic Party along the way?
Well, I think, you know, the national issues have become so prominent in party politics that it's been tough for the Democrats, particularly on some of the social issues that people in Louisiana aren't comfortable with. And I think the lack of prominent moderate Democrats on the national scene, the Bill Clintons, the John Bros, people of that nature, even Al Gore to some extent, has made some Democrats in Louisiana uncomfortable that they don't have those type of folks to look to as potential Democrats that can help them garner votes. And it's just been tough sledding in the South. Certainly Louisiana was the last holdout. I mean, Alabama, mm-hmm. Mississippi, Georgia, Tennessee, those states went, you know, red way before Louisiana. Louisiana was just sort of last to the party, so to speak. But I don't know. Well, you know, things tend to be cyclical and swing back and forth, and we'll see how it plays out. But you know, there's the largest growing voting base in Louisiana right now is independent voters. People seem to be disgusted with both parties right now, and maybe it'll be that those independent voters in Louisiana will be like national voters. They will determine elections.
When I speak to groups on occasion, sometimes I get the same question I just posed to you: what's happened to the Democratic Party? And one of the aspects that I note is that many of the people who are of my vintage, who I thought were talented people who might be good candidates, people like you and Bob Mann and Hal Killshaw, you opted to do other things. I think the three people I mentioned, and there were others, would have been very good candidates. So why did you not go the route as a political candidate and office holder?
It's not a very attractive thing to do anymore. It's become such a nasty business personally. You know, your spouse, your children, your family is exposed to things that I think in the past weren't kind of were, you know, off the rules, so to speak. And so I didn't find that attractive. The other thing I didn't find attractive, and I think it may very well be why Senator Breaux chose to hang it up, is they don't seem to get a whole lot done anymore. It seems to be more about fighting and not finding solutions as opposed to finding solutions and fighting over the credit. And moderation, compromise have all become bad words. And frankly, that's where I am. So, chose not to do it. I enjoy politics. I enjoy public service. I'm fortunate that I've been able to be business partners with Bud Corson and have a very successful government relations lobbying business. And so I get to be in the game and do well and enjoy it, but not have to suffer the slings and arrows of public office, which I think are unfortunate.
297-5633. We'll go to the phone lines in just a moment with Jim Nickel, former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. Yesterday, it was all but made official that Edwin Edwards will be running for Congress. He'll announce March 17th at the Baton Rouge Press Club, unless he changes his mind in the next 10 days. And one of the remarks that was quick came from Scott McKay, a notable Republican blogger, who says, is this the best the Democrats can do, to trot out an 86-year-old warhorse who spent one-tenth of his life in prison? Jim Nickel, what are your thoughts about the Cajun Prince reentering the political arena?
Well, it's America, and anybody that wants to run can run, and the Democrats can't tell people they can't run for office. This is a former governor, a former congressman who has chosen, if he does, to run for office, and no one in the Democratic Party can tell him not to. There's no one in the Republican Party that can tell him not to. It's his choice if he wants to run, and I mean, whether he was actively recruited or not, I don't know. I'm not involved in the party.
I don't think he was.
But it doesn't matter. I mean, if he wants to run, he's running, and he will certainly get a lot of attention and a lot of votes, and I mean, look, he's he's a big boy. He knows he's fair game. He knows when he steps out there, Scott McKay and others are going to take those shots. But I says, look, not much is going to bother him at this point.
No, I think he enjoyed the shots when he was in his prime. And now at this point in his life, I don't think he really cares about what other people think. But his legacy is something that is important to him. And he's got this great record, he says, of 26 elections. He's run first 25 times in primaries and general elections. He may very well run first in this primary. I think the chances of him making a runoff are strong. But after that, could lightning strike? Could Edwin Washington Edwards return to Congress 50 years after he first arrived?
I guess it's possible. I mean, that district is conservative. It's certainly been drawn conservative. And it's a tough district for Democrats, but, you know, anything could happen. I've learned certainly that we're in March, and that's in November, and a lot can happen in politics over that period of time. We don't know what's going to happen on the national scene. We don't know what's going to be going on the state scene, and certainly the dynamics could break his way, but we'll just have to wait and see.
The Democratic Party may have a dilemma of sorts if Edwin Edwards is in a runoff in December at the same time that Mary Landrieu is quite possibly going to be in a runoff. But my guess is that you will not see Edwin Edwards and Mary Landrieu on the same podium. And in 1996, when you were chair of the party, I recall just about every Democrat in the state was down at the Wharf in New Orleans the weekend before the presidential election, and there was Bill Clinton, and he carried Louisiana. Things have changed. We may have seen the last Democrat carry Louisiana in the presidential election for a long time.
It certainly seems that way. It's not going well for Democrats here, but it depends on what type of nominee the Democrats put up. If you have the right person that speaks to Louisiana as a Democrat, as a moderate, as a conservative Democrat, if you want to use those terms, I do think he or she would have a chance of carrying Louisiana. But right now, that's not the trend going on in the Democratic Party, and that's why it's making it hard for presidential campaigns. But, I mean, I think if you looked at some of the polling that's been going on the presidential race, Hillary Clinton polls pretty well in Louisiana, certainly better than she would have, you know, when she was first lady. But better than President Obama, and I think she would be a formidable candidate in Louisiana. I think she would have a shot at winning Louisiana early on.
Yeah, well, polls have shown that if Hillary were in a race against Bobby Jindal, which could happen, by the way,
sure,
2016, that Louisiana wouldn't be a slam dunk for the current governor. And we'll get to his remarks about President Obama. Bobby Jindal had his hitting shoes on yesterday in Washington, D.C., and made some strident remarks. And this is part of his policy his strategy to be a viable candidate for president. He's got a legislative session a few days away, and he's in Washington, D.C. slamming the president. That's not going to do much to get things done in Baton Rouge, is it?
Well, he doesn't have a huge agenda for this session. I mean, he's playing a lot of defense. He's been pretty aggressive the last few years in education and in health care, and so he's probably not in a position to have to be here and push an agenda as much as he needs to be here to defend some of his accomplishments. So I understand it. And I think something we all have to get our head around in Louisiana and politics is we have a governor running for president. We've never had that before. And that's what happens. I mean, I'm not here to debate whether he's right or wrong. The reality is we have a governor in his second term. He's running for president of the United States. At least it looks that way. And this is what they do. So, you know, this is what Mitt Romney was doing. This is what Barack Obama was doing when he was in the U.S. Senate. This is what Bill Clinton was doing when he was governor of Arkansas. This is what, you know, George Bush was doing when he was governor of Texas. Governors run for president. And when you run for president, you don't stay home all the time. And that I'm okay with that. You can be governor and still run for president, regardless of party.
Ben downtown. Ben, you're on the air with Jim Nickel.
Yes. Would it be selfish of Governor Edwards to run for Congress, because it will allow an extreme right winger to beat him in a runoff rather than having a more moderate Republican who at least might give some consideration to the have-nots of society prevail?
All right. I think that was Dan downtown. Thank you, Dan.
Well, I don't know. I mean, look, I've given up a long time ago in telling people who can run and who can't run. I mean, you want to run for Congress, you want to run for city council, you want to run for president, run. It's what makes our country great, that everybody jumps in. It's up to the voters to make those decisions. And I think sometimes most of us, like Dan downtown, overthink these things. And let's let the chips fall where they may and see what happens.
Well, we'll talk about Governor Jindal's remarks when we return after a short pause with Jim Nickel. The governor attacking the president, calling him the worst president in his lifetime. The governor was born in 1971, so his lifetime includes the presidencies of Richard Nixon and George W. Bush. Is Jimmy Carter he mentioned Carter is no longer the worst. I mean, is Jimmy Carter worse than Richard Nixon and George W. Bush? By the way, Bill Cassidy, candidate for the U.S. Senate, says George W. Bush was a much better president than Bill Clinton. We'll talk about this and more when we return to Jim Nickel. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-533-877-217-5757 for Jim Nickel, lobbyist and former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party. Bruce and Walden. Hi, Bruce. You're on the air with Jim.
Good morning, Jim. Yeah, I just wanted your guest to comment on the Koch brothers' efforts to control the Landrieu election.
Well, I mean, look, you know, it's the Supreme Court has ruled that money is free speech, and the Koch brothers have a lot of free speech. I'm not crazy about all of it. As long as it's legal, and I've been in politics long enough to know that if you're playing by the rules, then you're playing by the rules. So I hate it, and I don't hate it because it's attacking Senator Landrieu. I just don't like the tone of all of it. I mean, whether it's from the left or from the right, it clutters the – to me, it clutters the election, and I'd rather see the candidates speaking for themselves. And certainly they're not, you know, pristine in this process either. They do their own form of attacking, but there's nothing you can do about it. It is out there. I think the media is doing a pretty decent job of trying to point out to voters that you have third-party groups on both sides of the aisle that are injecting themselves, and you know, try as a voter to weed through all of that the best you can. But it has an impact. There's no doubt about it. And unless something is done on a legal level with a change in the law or the something at the Supreme Court, we're going to see more and more of it. So,
I recall when you were with the Democratic Party, there was a guy named Jack Kent who went after Buddy Romer in two straight elections and really hurt him. Third party expenditures. You weren't involved in that, I don't think.
No,
but you were certainly the beneficiary of it.
Yep.
297-5633. Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, on the hustings yesterday at a conservative group's gathering as he postures for the Republican nomination for president of the United States, speaking to the Conservative Political Action Conference. Actually, it was in National Harbor, Maryland, not far from the nation's capital. Here's the governor talking about President Barack Obama.
This administration has assaulted our religious liberties. It has assaulted the American dream. It's tried to redefine the American dream so that success is defined by government assistance. That's not the American dream. That's an American nightmare.
And the governor didn't stop there. He attacked the president's intelligence.
This president graduated from some of the best schools in the country. If I were him, and if he would like some free advice, if I were him, I'd consider suing Harvard Law School to get his money back, because I'm not sure what he learned in 3 years.
All right. What do you think, Jim Nickel?
Well, to put it in context, he was speaking to CPAC, which is the most conservative organization in the Republican Party. This is an annual pilgrimage that Republican candidates make. By the way, National Harbor is a beautiful place if you ever get over there. But and look, this is a red meat crowd. He's got to throw out the red meat, and that's what he was doing. He's trying to break through. I mean, you've got other Republicans that are leading him in the Republican primary for president, and he's trying to get heard. And when you go speak to a group like this, you got to swing hard. And he's made a decision. He's going to swing really hard. He thinks that the Republican primary for president is a referendum on Barack Obama, and he's made the decision to make that run. So we know what his message is, and he's running hard at it. So, I mean, I don't know if you're going to go to the part where he said he's the worst president in history, but we can talk about that next, or we can talk about that
now. Well, we'll talk about that, but you're using the term swinging hard, and that's what he's doing. And these Republicans like Chris Christie and Bobby Jindal, they posture themselves as tough guys. My guess is that Governor Jindal's never been in a fist fight in his life, but he's saying words that if you said them in certain places in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, you'd probably have to back them up in a different way. But when you question a man's intelligence, that's pretty
strong.
Well,
I think it was more. I think he was using it as a joke on Harvard and trying to play to the whole East Coast liberal thing. I know he's trying to connect some dots there. Look, I don't know if the governor's ever been in a fist fight in his life. I can tell you one thing: his political organization's tough. I mean, he has some very disciplined operators that he works with, and I've said that on this show before. You can agree with the governor, you can disagree with the governor. Very disciplined political organization, very tough staff. They go at things full bore, and they're going at this full bore. And it may work and it may not, but it won't be for lack of effort or lack of discipline.
And in the Republican primaries, men represent a big portion of those voting, and certainly men have voted in strong numbers for Republicans in the last six presidential elections. Mind you, in those six elections, five times the Democrats have gotten more votes. And the only time a Republican received more was when Bush beat John Kerry in a close one. But among men, in the last six presidential elections, Republicans have won going away among male voters, despite not getting a majority of the national vote, except for one occasion. For example, last time, among men, Romney 52, Obama 45, and yet Obama won the national election by 5 million votes. So it would seem that this tough guy stance, the John Wayne approach to politics, is something that the governor must feel like he has to do to be beloved by the Republican flock.
Yeah, that's what you do when you run for your presidential nomination. If you're a Democrat, you run left, and then you run to the middle as soon as you can. And if you're a Republican, you run right, and you try to run to the middle as soon as you can. And certainly when you're talking to CPAC, you speak the conservative tone, and I don't know how many men were at the meeting yesterday, but you're right. I mean, the Republicans are doing very well with men. Problem is it's kind of like my house. You know, I've got three daughters and a wife. I'm a minority, so it may work in the primary. I just don't win a lot of general elections at my house either. So,
that's a good way of putting it, Jim Nickel. Jindal again attacks Obama policies. Governor gives him worst president label at conservative event. That's the story in The Advocate, the story written by Michelle Milholland. And then if you go to the business pages, headlines, jobless claims at three-month low, and stocks rise as U.S. job market improves.
Well, it's a good soundbite, but it's way too soon to judge Obama's. I mean, I'm 52, and I've seen, you know, a lot of presidents in my time on this earth, and I'm certainly not prepared to say who the worst was since I've been born. It's probably, you know, a great line to throw out there at the CPAC, but it's way too soon to judge the Obama administration. It's not even over. But I mean, if you know, most presidencies are judged, at least in my opinion, by two things: is there peace and is there prosperity? And certainly, you know, the president could only go up from where we were. I mean, look, the Dow Jones Industrial, I think, was around 6,000 or 8,000 when Barack Obama became president of the United States.
7,500.
It's almost at 16. Now, look, light up the board saying it isn't the president. I get that. But he, you know, also heard when Barack Obama got elected the first time that America's economy was going to be destroyed and we were going to become, you know, a socialist nation. And I heard all these predictions. None of them came true. And so, you know, give him credit that he didn't mess up the economy. So the worst president ever. Pretty strong words, but that, you know, you're talking to CPAC, you got to throw it out there.
297-5633 is your number. Jim Nickel is the guest, and next year Governor Jindal will be on the sidelines as people are vying for his job, and it'll be a crowded field. And right now we've got two Republicans who are in, and David Vitter and Jay Darden, and quite possibly John Kennedy will get in. And then we have on the Democratic side John Bel Edwards with Jim Bernhardt thinking about it. Mitch Landrieu is a possibility. Mary Landrieu is a possibility if she loses.
Correct.
So how do you see it right now, a year and, what, 7 months out?
Well, I think it's a year and 7 months out. So whatever we're looking at now is going to be different. And you know, that's a funny thing about our governor's races in Louisiana is a lot of times they don't turn out the way you think conventional wisdom. I mean, did we think Buddy Romer was going to win in 87? No. Did we think Mike Foster was going to win in 91? No. Did we think Edwin Edwards was going to win in 95? No. Did we think
other way around?
Did we think Blanco was going to win? I mean, she ran to lieutenant governor and had a tough time raising money. She came out of the middle of the field and won. So they don't always turn out the way they're supposed to. But certainly right now, Senator Vitter is formidable. He's a sitting United States senator. He's going to have a lot of funds. He's very well organized. He has a lot of discipline within his team. He's going to be tough. Jay Darden comes from a major media market like Baton Rouge. He's popular with the Republican establishment in parts of the state. He's going to be tough. John Bel Edwards, if he can run as the only Democrat, will have that Democratic base that could launch him into the runoff and then game on. So what I love about it is, you know, it's we've got a U.S. Senate race between here and the governor's race, and everybody wants to talk about the governor's race.
What about David Vitter?
Well, Senator Vitter, I mean, I think I just said, is going to be very, very formidable. He's certainly got the name recognition already. He's an outstanding fundraiser, and he will be well-organized and formidable, no doubt about it.
As far as the issues in the Senate race this year, governor's race next year, what do you see is the defining issues?
That's a great question. I think, you know, the Senate race is being dominated right now by national issues like, you know, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, whatever you want to call it. There seems to be a little air coming out of that. The tenor and the tone towards the Affordable Care Act seems to have died down to some extent. I suspect they'll be trying to gin that up again towards election time. If the economy continues to improve and people feel better about their lot in life, then the anger quotient in the vote tends to go down, and folks tend to make decisions on other issues. And so I think Senator Landrieu will certainly try to play up the fact that she's a fighter for Louisiana, that she is in a position as chair of the Energy Committee to help the state. And then, you know, Congressman mm-hmm. Cassidy will make the argument that, you know, she's too far to the left, too much a part of Obama. If the election's about the president, Mary Landrieu's in trouble. If the election's about Louisiana, it's going to be a close race.
Now, you mentioned Landrieu is a fighter. We use these metaphors for physicality.
Right.
And I recall Landrieu when she ran for the U.S. Senate. In fact, we have the cut. I don't know if we can get it today, but she was talking about how she used to have to stand up for her brothers on the schoolyard. I guess she was talking about Mitch.
Well, look, Senator Landrieu was elected to the House of Representatives in Louisiana at a very young age, and you probably, you know, Jim Inkster, who knows all the numbers, probably knows the age she was.
Well, yeah, she was elected in 1979 when she was just short of her 24th birthday. She was 23.
23-year-old young woman in a body back then that was completely dominated by men, men who weren't very sensitive to women's issues and women's causes, and she got in there and probably had to do what she did on the schoolyard. She had to fight, and it was rough, and it probably gave her some pretty thick skin, and you know, that probably serves her well now in politics. That's quite a challenge to be a 23-year-old woman in the Louisiana House of Representatives back in 1979.
She was elected, so she came in same time as David Treen.
Yep.
And then she served two terms and treasurer for two terms and then ran for governor and just missed making a runoff.
Correct.
And I think she would have defeated Mike Foster. That's not a given, but I think she would have had a good shot. And she lost the governor's race, came back a year later, and barely beat Lewis Elwood Woody Jenkins. In that race, Bill Clinton carried Louisiana by 215,000 votes over Bob Dole. And Woody Jenkins lost to Mary Landrieu by 5,788 votes. So on same day, same ballot, one election apart, about 200,000 people or so voted for Clinton and then voted for Woody Jenkins. Mary Landrieu barely got by, but Bill Clinton, his coattails, I'm sure, helped at that point. Will he be on the campaign trail with her this year? I would think probably so.
You know what? I haven't thought of that, but not a bad idea. I mean, President Clinton has a pretty large fan base here in Louisiana, and he's a special talent politically. Certainly saw him in Louisiana this past year at some events at James Carville for Terry McAuliffe and other folks that were running nationally. He's got the touch, and he's got a lot of friends in Louisiana. He's got a lot of supporters in Louisiana, and certainly if he's someone that – is able to help Senator Landrieu, I suspect we will see him here.
And she doesn't have many Democratic surrogates. Will we see John Breaux? Will he come back?
Oh, I suspect if she asked Senator Breaux, I'm sure he would do that. I don't think he would shy away from that opportunity. He probably misses the old campaign trail a little bit anyway. So get out and, you know, get a little exercise.
But the real question will be whether Breaux and Clinton will be out there for Edwin Edwards come December. I think you might not see them with the convicted felon. This puts the president in a box, and we did get a question here from a listener. We've talked about this before, but Casey says, the president almost certainly, in Casey's view, has to pardon Edwin Edwards, because what an embarrassment it would be to have the Democratic candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives be a convicted felon who can't even vote.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I suspect no one in the White House counsel's office is contemplating that at this point. I'm sure they'll cross that bridge.
It's a topic of discussion, and this does throw a monkey wrench into Senator Landry's plans. On the converse side, Edwin Edwards will certainly stimulate turnout to some extent. People who otherwise not vote will vote, and people who don't like him will vote.
Correct.
It's almost the David Duke effect here.
It'll be interesting to see. He will definitely have folks interested, and his fans will turn out, and his enemies will turn out.
He is a man who certainly attracts a crowd. Mm-hmm. And remember, Earl Long, he won his race for Congress in 1960, and he died before he took office.
Yeah.
It killed him. He was 65. Edwin's 87, or he will be 87.
You know, Governor Edwards has never had a drink in his life and never smoked, and he's taken pretty good care of himself. I suspect he's a lot healthier than Earl Long was.
A lot healthier, and he does eat high-fat foods. He dines in some of these great dining establishments we have in Baton Rouge and New Orleans and elsewhere. And he had heart surgery in his last term in 1995, so that's been a while, but he's not your typical 87-year-old man, no doubt about it. What about the session? What's the major focus of the legislative session?
Well, I think we're going to see a lot on Common Core. There are just a lot of bills on that. There's going to be a lot of debate about education reforms that the governor accomplished, teacher tenure, and some of those things. The governor will be trying to defend some of those policies and keep those in place. We're going to see a big battle over this whole situation where the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority has filed suit against 97 oil companies. So there's going to be legislation to try to rein in the ability of public entities to hire lawyers on contingency fees to pursue some of these claims that they feel they have against the oil and gas companies. And then we're going to see, a lot of other sort of side issues. There'll be some other litigation reform issues that we'll be watching. But overall, it'll be a lot of – I don't think there'll be a one major theme to the legislature. The governor doesn't have one big push, whether it's changing the public hospital system or changing some of the health care issues. It's going to be a hodgepodge of things. And, these legislators, most of them are up for reelection 2 years from now. The governor's not. So his impact on the legislature starts to wane a little bit in his second term. But he'll still have a lot of influence on it, and we'll see.
We'll also have much discussion in the session about things like the return of the electric chair. Mm-hmm. Lawmaker Katrina Jackson, a black Democrat, has filed a bill that would almost shut down abortion in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. That'll be a big topic. And medical marijuana, that's going to be a topic. We're going to get sidetracked, some might call it that, on a lot of peripheral issues that have little to do with dollars and cents, but have a lot to do with passion. And we'll talk about that when we return. A few more minutes with Jim Nickel, and we're slated also to hear from State Representative Dalton Honoré if everything goes according to plan. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. If you're calling outside Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757, Inkstershow at WRKF.org. Jim Nickel, native of Crowley, is with us. Grew up in the town that produced Edwin Washington Edwards and John Berlinger Brough. A lot of politicos came out of Crowley. Edmund Reggie.
Chris John. Jack
now.
Brooks, the former congressman from Texas, was a Crowley native.
And Crowley has how many citizens?
I would guess anywhere from 12 to 14,000. I'm heading there tomorrow. Niece is getting married. Going to go to the Rice Capital of America tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it.
And you sent your daughters off to the University of Alabama, right?
I didn't send them there. They chose to go there.
That would be an issue if you were...
Yeah, that would probably be the number one issue if I ever chose to run, is the disloyalty of my daughters.
And Jim Nickel is also the spotter on the LSU football broadcast. So you've gotten to see the Tigers up close and personal, and this year Alabama comes to Baton Rouge and what will be the marquee game at Tiger Stadium for the 2014 season.
Spring practice cranks up tomorrow, and I think, you know, we're all anticipating a battle for quarterback for LSU, and I think if we can settle on one this spring, we can come into the fall with, I think, a pretty good offensive team. We lost a lot of people, but so did everybody else, so we'll see. I think we have really, really good coaches and on both the offensive and defensive side, and I think they'll form the team pretty quickly, and it'll be fun to head to, is it Houston, to play Wisconsin to start the state, start the schedule. So
why aren't they playing in Baton Rouge?
I don't know, but we have a new stadium expansion that'll be ready. Tiger Stadium will be 100,000 when we come home.
You know, the Tiger Stadium with its expansion will be about as large as the city of St. George will be if the citizens of St. George make it happen. That's a issue that's simmering at the Capitol, and Bodie White has bills regarding education that are, of course, related to St. George. What do you think will happen with that?
I hope it works out. I think a lot about this issue because I come from a fairly large family, four brothers and a sister, and we get along almost all the time. But sometimes there's a little spat here or there, and it can grow into something worse. But in the end, we all end up at mom's house on Sunday for supper. And I hope that's what happens here. I think there are people in our city that are concerned about education and it's grown into something bigger. But ultimately, I feel like we're better when we're all together. And I hope that we can somehow find in the end to be all together. And I think a lot of people think that way. But there's some legitimate concerns folks have out there, and they want them addressed, and they're using these vehicles to be heard. But in the end, together is better than apart, I hope, and I hope it all works out. And I think there are a lot of people on both sides that feel that way. They just have some passion, and it's reaching some points where we need to all come back together, I hope.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org for Jim Nickel, former chair of the Louisiana Democratic Party, who along with Bud Corson, they're together, a lobbying team of renown, probably one of the top, if not the top lobbying company in the state right
13
now.
13 years we've been
13
going
years.
On.
Yep. Three letters in the first name, seven letters. Is it seven or six? N-I-C-K-E-L-C-O-U-R-S. He's got seven, you got six. Okay. All right. Thought I was on to something there. But here's a question from Terry. Of the Republicans running in the 6th District, and there are three well-known Republicans, one being Paul Dietzel, who's well-known because of his grandfather.
Right.
And Dan Clater, state senator, and Garrett Graves. Who is the most formidable of the three?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen any polling. I think it's too early to poll. Certainly, Dietzel's working very, very hard. Clater's ability as an incumbent state senator, being from Baton Rouge with Baton Rouge name recognition, is got a lot of value. And then Garrett Graves has that sort of that connection. I think a lot of us are just starting to realize in Baton Rouge that this district goes down to Houma. I mean, it's got some bayou connections, which we're not accustomed to. I mean, for years, the 6th District was, you know, Baton Rouge, Livingston, East Feliciana, West Feliciana, and it was a Baton Rouge district. Now there's some value in having roots down along the bayou, and Garrett's time with Congressman Tozan and with his all of his work in the coastal area gives him some fundraising ability down south. I think they're all, you know, I certainly think the top two are Clater and Graves. Dietzel's working hard, but he's just got a long way to go, I think, as far as catching those two. But we'll see. And then there's some other people joining as well. There's a Baker businessman that jumped in, I believe, a couple days ago and has some pretty good campaign staff involved. And there's going to be a lot of candidates running for the 6th Congressional District.
Including Edwin Washington
and, of course, Governor Edwards.
And the more candidates who run, provided that there aren't a lot of Democrats running,
at this point there are not. The greater chance he makes the runoff.
The greater chance he makes the runoff, because I can't see an election where he doesn't get 20% of the vote.
No, I mean, I don't know the statistics of the district, but
21% African American.
Is it 21% African American? So, I mean, yeah, he's going to do well to get to 2025,
And if he gets that, then he's probably in a runoff. In fact, he probably runs first in the primary.
If all those other candidates stay in and have, you know, credible races, yeah. I suspect at some point there's going to be some weeding out of folks.
The debates will be fun, won't they?
Yeah, they will.
They'll be fun.
And it'll be real fun if Jim Inkster is the moderator, because he'll get them going for sure.
Well, that would be fun. Anything that Edwin Edwards does is always interesting. He needs to wear his hearing aids, though. You know, he's sharper than anybody when he's wearing his hearing aids. Mm-hmm. But I was at a forum with him, and he forgot them, and it was I had to repeat everything. It's funny because he couldn't hear anything anybody was saying, and I'd have to talk in his ear about what somebody had just said, and he would just immediately pick up on it. And I remember a very prominent person who's in the know about most things said, he's the only one who got the big picture, and the big picture was based on, you know, I'd say something like Medicaid, and he would just go on. And that's the way he is. He was always quicker than the rest of us, and we'll find out if he still is. They didn't call him Fast Eddie for nothing, did they?
No, he's stayed on top of issues for a long time, and he knows how to speak to them concisely. When you spend that much time in public life, you get pretty good at it.
And the reality show was not a success, but the congressional election, it may last more than 2 weeks.
It may. It will.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. 2975633. Thank you, Jim Nickel. And now we're joined by State Representative Dalton Honore, who will be down at the Capitol talking about pot and marijuana. And good morning to you, Representative Honore.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning.
What are you doing regarding legislation pertaining to marijuana?
Well, Jim, my bill picks up. It's House Bill 720. It picks up where Act 874 of the 1991 regular session left off. In 1991, the state legislature passed a bill authorizing a physician to prescribe marijuana for patients suffering from glaucoma, chemotherapy, or cerebral palsy, quadriplegia. And the act failed to provide a mechanism for legally dispensing and purchasing of marijuana. Even though it could be prescribed in Louisiana, it has been no legal. It's not legal to prescribe it where a guy could go get it filled. He had no place to get it filled, and this law has been on the books for 23 years. Gentlemen, my bill, what I'm attempting to do is provide for a very highly regulated control of prescribing and dispensing authority for the therapeutic marijuana. You know, Governor General went on board as supporting this measure as long as it was a control, strictly controlled. It allowed doctors that are certified, and it's only a three classification of doctors that would be able to prescribe this medicine. It's neurologists, oncologists, and ophthalmologists, to their patients. So it's not a wholesale that any physician can prescribe the medication for you.
All right. Well, on another topic related to this, and I don't know if you're going to get into this in the session as well, you personally, but James Gill, now columnist for The Advocate, says we have 1,372 citizens in prison for simple possession of marijuana, average sentence 8.4 years, and 10 of the inmates are doing life. So basically, if you go to the Jazz Fest and smoke pot, as many prominent people in our community do, you face the prospect of going to jail for life under the current system. Are you going to address this at all?
I have addressed. I got another bill filed, House Bill 130. I met with the Sentencing Commission, who's the commission that recommends to the governor, you know, about bills that's filed. My bill, the one I have filed at this time, states that if a person is arrested and charged for marijuana, that marijuana charge could not be used in the Habitual Offenders Act. And it's been an old practice of prosecutors of wanting to put somebody away for a long time, so they look back and see whether you had a previous charge and conviction on marijuana, regardless of the amount, and put the three strikes clause on you, and you're gone for life. this is a thing that I've also sponsored legislation for, and I had some strong opposition, and regardless of how much marijuana you were caught with, especially with the trend like it is today, that marijuana would not be a charge used to put you in prison for life. If you read, like you stated, James Gilton, Senator Costello could say he's just opposed to anything that the Sentencing Commission comes out with. And I can see him now. We had a bill last year to reduce the sentencing on marijuana charges to come in line with some of the rest of the states, and he opposed that. Matter of fact, the bill never didn't make it through the Senate.
297-5633. Still time to get in with State Representative Dalton Honore. HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on the air with Representative Honore.
Good morning, gentlemen. Representative Honore, if you owned a business and had an ad in the paper, like many do today, that required drug testing to be employed, and you were an employer, and they tested positive for marijuana, either prior employment or while employed by you, would you hire them and or keep them? Thank you, sir.
Oh, well, it will follow basically the same rules as alcohol. You know, you got treatment centers for alcoholism, and they also, we're trying to divert some of the monies in state government to keep some of these people out of prison for marijuana and take treatment. It's just another a product that will cause the employer to weigh in on it, whether they want to hire a person who have a problem or screen them before. It's handled just like alcohol. If you go on a job and high in marijuana, then the employer got a right to suspend or terminate whatever his policies are. But it would follow the same rules as being intoxicated, being under the influence.
Why do you think there's this aversion to change? You mentioned Senator Costello. I don't think he's alone. There are those who believe we should keep things the way they are and make it even more punitive.
Well, the marijuana, medical marijuana, and I think we may be getting, and some people are getting it confused, medical marijuana is already the law in Louisiana. It is passed 21 states, including the District of Columbia, for medical marijuana use. The southern states are last to come on board. Just the other day, the legislature in Georgia, House, passed legislation by overwhelming majority, maybe, to legalize medical marijuana. It's going to the state of people in Florida in November to vote on it. The people in Louisiana, through numerous polls, have indicated by at least 65% that they all in favor of medical marijuana. Imprisoning people for simple possession, the state of Mississippi, you know, can give you a citation and let you go on and go to court and pay a fine like a traffic ticket. This is something that's sweeping the country. It will cut out on homicides and every other kind of crime. It would cut out on importing marijuana into this country by ship or underground tunnels. And it's a strict bill I have written that would restrict this only to Louisiana. It has to be grown in Louisiana in restricted areas. It's governed by a 10-member
okay,
board.
Okay, we're short on time, and I know we want to ask you about both bills. Okay, let's try Rinaldi and Sherwood. Rinaldi, good morning. You're on. Please be brief. You're on with Representative Honore.
Representative Honore is one of the first African-American members of law enforcement in Baton Rouge. The district that you represent is proportionally high in the number of African-Americans going to jail for marijuana charges. Is this issue not a taxation issue on the state of Louisiana, the people of Louisiana? In other words, a conservative point of view might be that we're wasting a whole lot of money putting the wrong people in jail for marijuana charges.
Well, as one of the first African-Americans in law enforcement in East Baton Rouge Parish, I've seen times where the person get arrested, and this was back in the 60s, for simple possession and wind up in prison. The trend has changed, the mindset has changed, and now African-Americans go to prison for marijuana four times as compared to other races, four times more.
So race is a factor, isn't it?
Race is a factor in filling our prisons, and our prisons are full, and the majority of the people there has some charge of a drug charge.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nonviolent, but it's drug charges.
Well, it's an issue that is gaining attention, and I think justifiably so, and Representative Honoré is at the forefront. And what do you think your chances are?
Well, right now, Jim, I have not found any open opposition to the bill.
Well, you say Kostelkis. You're talking about the medical marijuana, but the habitual offender, my guess is you will find some opposition.
Well, during the sentencing commission hearing, I removed synthetic marijuana from the bill that agreed to move synthetic marijuana because synthetic marijuana and regular marijuana have carried the same penalties.
Okay, we got to roll, but thank you. We'll follow it. Thank you, Representative Honoré. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.